comments and then get the ball rolling a few minutes early. Is that all right, Chief Judge Bartley?
That's fine, Mr. Bach.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. This is the clerk of the court, Greg Block, confirming procedures for the oral argument sketch to be conducted by teleconference this morning. If arguing counsel or a judge drops from this teleconference, we will pause the proceedings and clock until the judge and or counsel is reconnected. In accordance with the instructions we previously provided counsel, we will ring a chime that sounds like this. When counsel has 3 minutes remaining in allotted time, and a bell that sounds like this when counsel's total allotted time expires. We do have arguing counsel in this case on the call. Ms. April Donahauer, can you hear me?
Yes, good morning. This is April Donahauer of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick, appearing on behalf of Mr. Garner.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. And we also have Ms. Jacqueline Karen on the call. Can you hear me?
Yes, this is Jacqueline, and I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, thank you very much. Chief Judge Bartley, did you hear both counsel clearly, and can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Mr. Block, and I heard both counsel.
Thank you, Chief Judge Bartley. Judge Meredith, did you hear both counsel clearly, and can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear both counsel and you. Thank you.
Thank you. And Judge Toth, did you hear both counsel, and can you hear me?
Yes to both questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Chief Judge Bartley, the call is configured and all participants are now ready to proceed.
Very good, Mr. Block. You may call the court to order.
United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Bartley, and I'm joined by Judge Meredith and Judge Toth. We are convened today via teleconference to consider arguments in the matter of Ronald V. Garner versus Secretary of Veterans Affairs, number 18-5865. And the issue before us is, among other things, what is sufficient to reasonably raise the issue of obesity as an intermediate step towards secondary service connection for a disability. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
April Donahauer of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick, appearing on behalf of Mr. Garner. With me as co-counsel is Amy Odom, also of that firm.
Great, thank you, Ms. Donahauer. And Ms. Karen?
Yes, this is Jacqueline Karen, and I'm joined by Deputy Chief Counsel Anna Whited on behalf of the Secretary.
Okay, great. Each party is going to have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Ms. Donahauer, do you want to reserve a portion of your time?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes, please.
Okay, that's fine. We'll make that happen. And Ms. Donahauer, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge Bartley, Your Honors, and may it please the court. As the Chief Judge just noted, the court has asked what is sufficient to reasonably raise the issue of obesity as an intermediate step between a service-connected disability and a claimed disability. The standard, which comes from Delisio, is whether there is a reasonably apparent and potential link at each step in this chain. So the first question is whether the service-connected condition is the reasonably apparent and potential cause or aggravator of obesity. And the second question is whether obesity is the reasonably apparent and potential cause or aggravator of the claimed condition. That standard was met here. First, decreased physical activity is a potential cause of weight gain and obesity. The general counsel opinion acknowledges that. Here, Mr. Garner's activity level decreased because of his service-connected joint conditions and depression. At the same time, his weight increased and he became obese. Second, both VA examiners who addressed Mr. Garner's sleep apnea, said that his obesity was relevant to or a risk factor for it, and the board deemed the examiner's reports probative. The existence
now, Howard, this is Judge Bartley. I just have a question. I want to take you back just a few sentences. You mentioned that in this case, the veteran had less mobility and was able to exercise less due to service-connected conditions, and that he then gained weight. Now, and you mentioned first that we always have to have some evidence, either in the record or explicit statement from the veteran, on each chain of the link, so to speak. Now, what evidence in the record are you using to show that his obesity was caused by his inability to move around and to exercise? Is there actually a record that says that?
There are records that collectively show that his activity level decreased because of both his joint conditions and his depression. And there is evidence that shows that at the same time, his weight increased, resulting in his becoming obese. And that evidence is in the record at pages 1212, 3201, 3202, 3321, and 2857. And this shows that these two processes happened concurrently, the lack of physical activity and the weight gain leading to obesity.
And so would you, I just want to clarify here, are you expecting that an adjudicator's kind of lay knowledge that lack of exercise is related to obesity? Are you expecting that to kind of be part of this chain that you're arguing exists?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, just because one thing is happening, let me just clarify, just because one thing happens at the same time as another, that is, the veteran becomes less mobile and then gains weight, I mean, he may have also grown long hair during that time, but it doesn't mean that that was related to the lack of mobility. There could be a lot of things going on. There's really nothing in the record that I see that relates the two. But anyway, I interrupted you. What were you going to say? And if you could address that point as well.
Yes, of course. I take Your Honor's point and concern, and I would say yes to Your Honor's question of whether background knowledge about the link between decreased physical activity and weight gain is part of the inquiry here. I think that it is. We know that there can be a link between lack of physical activity or exercise and weight gain. We know this as a matter of common knowledge, I would argue, but we also know it because it's in the general counsel opinion, because the hypothetical used in there is of a service-connected back disability leading to less exercise, leading to weight gain and obesity. We also saw it in this court's recent decision in the Walsh case, that decreased physical activity can be a cause. And just to sort of piggyback off of that point, all that we need to know for purposes of this inquiry, the reasonably raised inquiry, is that less physical activity can be a cause of Mr. Garner's weight gain and obesity here. We don't need to know that it is the cause.
This is Judge Meredith. Can I jump in there? So you're basically, if I understand you correctly, acknowledging that there's no evidence in the record discussing the causes of this particular veteran's weight gain.
That is correct, Your Honor. I would agree with that.
And so I guess I would come back to Robinson, which says that VA is not obligated to address all possible theories of entitlement. So if inactivity potentially caused by service-connected conditions is just one possible cause of his weight gain, how do you square that with Robinson? Are you essentially requiring VA to address all possible theories at that point if there's no actual evidence in this case?
No, Your Honor, and I have, there are a couple of reasons why. First, the reason that we rely on Delisio is because it provides a helpful synthesis of the point Your Honor just stated from Robinson and subsequent case law, namely Clemens. So while the board is not required to address all possible theories, Delisio clarified that it is required to address reasonably apparent and potential causes. And in doing so, VA is charged with knowing what those might be based on reasonably apparent and potential links that the veteran might not know about, and that there might not be veteran-specific medical evidence that actually makes the link. So Robinson, of course, remains good law, but Delisio provided some helpful additional explanation of what happens when a veteran might not be aware of a potential theory of causation that development of the record and VA's knowledge of potential theories of causation might make apparent. And I think the potential language is important here. It doesn't require consideration of all possible theories. But here it's not simply one, any possible theory. We know that lack of physical activity can lead to weight gain, and we have Mr. Garner's specific statements at 3201 and 3202 of the record that his conditions led to less physical activity. And I think which leads into why a couple of reasons why the standard that the secretary has offered is too high. One reason is that it seems to require veteran-specific medical evidence of a link between decreased physical activity and weight gain. And we don't need that at the reasonably raised step here. And we have, at the same time, knowledge and acknowledgement from VA in the precedent opinion and also this court's decision in Walsh that there can be a connection between less exercise and weight gain. So while veteran-specific evidence will come into play at the adjudicatory phase, it's not in play here when we're just determining whether the theory is reasonably raised. The second reason why the standard is too high is that it seems to invite the court to weigh the evidence, which is not part of the reasonably raised inquiry. So whether the theory has merit and whether there is medical evidence that Mr. Garner's lack of exercise was related to his weight gain has to do with whether he can prove this theory of causation and not whether it was simply required to be addressed.
Now, this is Judge Bartley again, Ms. Donna Howard. Now, I understand what you're saying, and, you know, the secretary may have kind of maybe alluded more to the merits in his briefing than we would like, but I'm not sure where your argument comes from. That is, did the DC opinion say that the evidence as to obesity as to lack of exercise causing obesity doesn't need to be personal to the veteran, and that just general knowledge could suffice? Or is there another case where we've taken maybe a general lay knowledge of medical matters in the community and held that would suffice to raise an issue? The only reason I'm asking is it sounds kind of dangerous to say, well, an adjudicator should just, this is something they should know, that lack of exercise can do this. And so any time in the record that there's an indication of lack of mobility due to a service-connected condition, and independently there is a fact that the veteran is obese, that this would be reasonably raised without any further, you know, either the veteran saying, hey, I think I gained weight because of my lack of mobility, or a doctor saying, hey, this lack of mobility may have caused his obesity, or something like that. That it's just kind of unusual that you would say, well, this is just something an adjudicator should instinctively know because people in the general population know it, and because it was mentioned in the GC opinion.
To your Honor's question about case law to this effect, the court has said in Ingram that it's the secretary who's charged with knowing what benefits are available, and the acknowledgement of the link in the GC opinion suggests that VA knows that this is a potential route by which obesity can be an intermediate step. That is, when an already service-connected condition leads to less exercise. And there's no dispute that in the record here we do have that evidence. I think McClendon is also instructive here, particularly in its discussion of the legislative history of the VCAA, where Congress clarified just how low the standard is even to trigger the duty to assist. And here we are at a step even antecedent to the duty to assist inquiry. So, and you know, in McClendon, the example was of a veteran who did parachute jumps in service and later developed knee problems. Like, we know that there can be a potential link there, and that's enough to trigger the duty to assist, Congress said. So similarly here, when we're just at the reasonably raised inquiry, the fact that we know that less exercise could have an impact on weight, together with the veteran-specific evidence that he was exercising less and his activity level was lower, is enough collectively to meet this very low threshold.
This is Judge Meredith. Could I jump in there? I want to talk a little bit about reasonably, whether it's reasonably apparent or reasonably raised. The evidence that you pointed to as raising this theory spans from 1986 to 2016 or 2017. Order for VA to have recognized this theory, they would have had to have known that the appellant had these service-connected disabilities that limited his ability to do some physical activities, and then the period of time when his activities were limited, I believe you acknowledged in your reply brief that he did start exercising again at some point, and then the corresponding fluctuations in his weight between 1986 and 2016 or 2017. So I would just ask you, in order for an issue to be reasonably raised by the evidence of record, is there a limit on how much information VA would have to piece together to come up with that theory? And I guess in particular here, is it reasonable to have expected them to look at what the veteran's weight was in 1986 while he was in service, and then just compare that to what his weight was in 2011, 2016, and 2017?
Yes, I think it's reasonable to expect the adjudicators to have done that. And the I would characterize the what Your Honor just characterized as fluctuations in his weight rather as an upward trend. And to that end, the rate of his weight gain is not necessarily at issue here. What's at issue is that he ended up being obese, and there's explicit evidence in the record that by 2011 he was obese, whereas when he left service his build was medium. So we have evidence of an upward trend in weight that resulted in his obesity. So, you know, setting aside the rate of that increase, there was an upward trend.
Counsel, this is Judge Toth. I wanted to ask about that. How is it that obesity is demonstrated? Is it just basically by the height and weight metrics, and then we can extrapolate as to whether the person's obese, as to whether they meet MI? Or is it a finding, for instance?
It can be either, Your Honor. Here there was a finding that he was obese as of 2011, and that's on page 1212 of the record. It could also be, as Your Honor suggested, a BMI calculation. I believe it's above 30 or 31 that demonstrates obesity.
This is Judge Meredith. I'm not sure I heard an answer to the first part of my last question. Was, is there a limit on how much information VA would have to piece together in order for a theory to be reasonably raised by the evidence of record?
I'm not sure I'm understanding Your Honor's question. Is there an example of
what I would point to your brief. You pointed to evidence from 1986 to 2017 and add all of those pieces together to say that this theory was reasonably raised by the evidence of record. It's the word reasonably that I'm trying to get at is even if you went through the record and pieced all that together, maybe it raises it, but is it reasonable to have expected the board to have done all of these comparisons of his weight at various periods of time, recognizing when his activity might have been limited, whether that corresponded to weight gain, in order for it to be reasonably apparent or reasonably raised?
I understand the question now. Thank you for the clarification. I would say that I would respectfully disagree about the extent to which the piecing together the actual weight measurements is required. What we need to know here for purposes of the theory being reasonably raised is that he exercised less and that he ended up obese. So we know that he wasn't obese at one point in time and he was later, and in the meantime he decreased his activity levels. So the piecing together of the various weights over time is less important or unnecessary in light of the fact that there is a finding that he ended up obese. And I would also add to that point that, as the court pointed out in Walsh, aggravation is a possible link here as well. So There's also the possibility that the decrease in physical activity was an aggravating factor of the obesity. But again, for that purpose, we don't need to piece together all of the specific weights over time. We see that he was obese by 2011 and that the sleep apnea diagnosis followed by a couple of years after that. I hear that my time is running short. I just wanted to pick up on one other point there
let's add another 5 minutes to appellant's time. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to pick up on the point of the subsequent exercise that he is shown to have done around 2018, we did acknowledge that in our reply brief, and as we argued in our reply brief, that goes to the weighing of the evidence, and the ultimate merits of this theory of entitlement and whether Mr. Garner can prevail on that. And the question here is not whether he can prevail on this theory of entitlement, it's whether it was reasonably apparent and potential as a route to service connection. And it's also, to some extent, you know, even though weighing is not required at this step, the fact that he started exercising years after he developed sleep apnea and years after he became obese and then developed sleep apnea doesn't appear to be relevant to whether there was a either a relationship between his lack of exercise and becoming obese in the first place, or a relationship between that and the development of his sleep apnea.
Now, Ms. Donahue, this is Judge Bartley. I would like to move to the first argument that you made in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
That was, as I read it, that was an argument that the as to service connection for OSA directly related to MDD, the exams were inadequate. Can you just give me a summary of your argument real quick? It had to do with afternoon sleepiness.
Yes. I apologize if I interrupted, Your Honor.
No, that's okay. Could you just summarize what your argument was?
Certainly. So the secretary has conceded, and there's no dispute, that the 2015 exam here did not address aggravation. So the question is the 2017 examiner's discussion of aggravation, and the examiner's rationale is inadequate for the board to do the inquiry it needed to do under Ward. And the reason why is that the examiner simply addressed whether there was a relationship between the depression and the underlying disease process of sleep apnea. That's not the aggravation question. And the secretary is mistaken that how depression affected the underlying biological mechanism of sleep apnea is related to the question of aggravation here. As the court recently reaffirmed in Ward, the question is whether there's an increase in the functional impairment that's caused by the sleep apnea here. So our argument is that even the examiner's own underlying findings, his conclusion notwithstanding, suggest that depression caused insomnia and therefore worsened the daytime sleepiness that Mr. Garner had already due to his sleep apnea. So there is additional impairment of earning capacity due to the sleep apnea that's caused by the depression suggested by the examiner's underlying findings and the other evidence. And the examiner's focus on the underlying disease process did not answer the pertinent question for the board's decision on aggravation.
So the question that you think should have been asked was one that you take from Ward about functional impairment.
Yes.
Whether it's as likely as not that OSA was aggravated by service-connected MDD. Okay, now how again does the insomnia and the daytime sleepiness? It just seems like you're kind of making some leaps here, and I'm not quite sure I understand. You said the MDD and the underlying MDD caused insomnia and worsened the veteran's daytime sleepiness that was due to OSA?
It sounds like my time has expired. May I respond?
Yes, of course. Yes. We'll extend for another 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't believe there are leaps here because the examiner's underlying findings show two things. First, the examiner acknowledges insomnia due to the depression, and the examiner also finds daytime hypersomnolence due to the sleep apnea. So we know that both conditions have some impact on Mr. Garner's daytime functioning. So the question is whether the functional impairment that he has due to the sleep apnea is worse because of his depression than it otherwise would be, sleep apnea standing alone. So the evidence suggesting that is already in the record. And what we need here is an opinion as to whether the functional impairment is greater from the sleep apnea due to the depression than it would be in isolation. That's the pertinent question that the board needed an answer to here. Whether depression affects the collapse of the oropharyngeal tissue, which is the question that the examiner addressed, doesn't tell the board whether there's additional impairment of earning capacity caused by depression than there otherwise would be due to the sleep apnea alone. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time, Your Honors.
Judge Meredith, do you have any further questions?
I don't, thank you.
Judge Toth, do you have any further questions?
I do not.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Donna Hauer.
Thank you.
Ms. Karen, you may proceed when you're ready.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. Evidence that suggests that obesity is an intermediate step between a service-connected disability and a claimed disability is sufficient to reasonably raise the issue. This general suggest standard is reflected in Robinson v. Peek and its progeny, and is the general standard for when an issue is reasonably raised by the record. In this case, there is no evidence suggesting a link between appellant's service-connected conditions and his obesity. There is evidence in the record stating that appellant gained weight during the decades post-service and separate evidence of functional impairment during the same period. However, just because two things occur concurrently does not suggest that they are at all related. In order to reasonably raise the issue of obesity as an intermediate step, two components must be satisfied. There must be one, evidence that suggests that a service-connected disability caused or aggravated the veteran's obesity, and two, evidence that suggests that the veteran's obesity caused or aggravated the claimed secondary condition. While the record in this case reasonably raised the issue of whether appellant's obesity caused or aggravated the claimed secondary case, in this case sleep apnea, it did not raise the issue of whether a service-connected disability caused or aggravated appellant's obesity. As previously stated, the evidence of record is insufficient to suggest that appellant's service-connected conditions caused or aggravated his obesity. The evidence appellant argues raises the issue is evidence that the veteran experienced functional impairment that limited his ability to exercise, and separate evidence that appellant gained weight post-service and ultimately became obese. However, the record does not contain any connection between appellant's functional impairment and his obesity. Just because two things occur in a similar time frame does not suggest that those two things are related, or that one caused or aggravated the other. In other words, the missing piece is anything in the record that suggests that appellant's lack of interest in doing anything caused by his major depressive disorder or his physical limitations in any way influenced his weight. Further, as the 2017 GC opinion recognized in its citation to the scientific literature, obesity is a complex medical disorder with many potential causes and aggravating factors and processes such as food energy availability, behavioral and developmental processes, and genetic and epigenetic effects that engage together in a dynamic interplay to produce obesity. To the extent that appellant's counsel argues that the board should have recognized that limitations on ability to exercise cause or aggravate obesity, she asks that the board make a medical determination that neither she nor the board is qualified to make. While obesity may feel like something we have firsthand knowledge of, given its prevalence and discussion in popular culture or day-to-day life, it is still a medical determination like any other. The board is not required to know the causes and aggravating factors for every medical condition and search for those causes and aggravating factors in the record.
This is Judge Toth. So, I mean, what would have, in a sense, reasonably raised this linkage that you mentioned? Give me some examples just so I can kind of see it in my mind's eye.
So something that could have reasonably raised the issue would have been a direct assertion by appellant or appellant's wife or any sort of lay statement saying that his limitations on activity level caused him to become obese or made him more likely to be obese. Anything in the record, any sort of medical opinion or medical record that suggests that there's any sort of connection here between his limitations in activity or his disinterest caused by his major depressive disorder.
He did an exam in 2017. I mean, is that the type of questions that the examiner would have asked? I mean, is that information, you know, the type that an examiner seeks to elicit?
So the examination was ordered here for based on his MDD and whether it was secondary to his major depressive disorder. So the examination was not ordered on this issue of obesity as an intermediate step, and rightly so, because it was not raised by the record here. So if there was an examination on the issue, then you would expect that the examination would address that. But otherwise, an examiner and the board also don't need to address issues that are not reasonably raised by the record.
Let me interrupt here. I just received a message from Judge Toth that he dropped off. Mr. Block, have you received anything?
I have not, Your Honor, but if we would pause for a moment, we'll confirm.
Yes.
Your Honor, I believe Judge Toth is back online. Maybe we can ask him to confirm that.
I am. Sorry about that. I meant to hit my mute button. I hit the phone call.
Okay. Thanks, Judge Toth. Chief Judge Bartley, okay, I think we're all back on.
Yes, let's proceed. Ms. Karen?
Yes. Did you hear my response to your previous question, Your Honor?
You know, I didn't. I apologize. If you could, give a brief answer. Thanks.
Sure. So the examination in this case was not on the issue of obesity as an intermediate step. It was on the issue of whether appellant's sleep apnea was secondary to his major depressive disorder. So because the examination was not on the issue and because an examination did not need to be ordered here, given that there was no evidence suggesting this connection in the record, I don't know that you would necessarily see the examiner eliciting this kind of information because it was not the purpose of the examination. And I would emphasize again that, or I would also note that whether something is reasonably raised by the record is a factual determination. And so the board here, by not addressing the issue, implicitly determined that it was not reasonably raised by the record, and therefore the finding could only be overturned if it was clearly erroneous. The secretary submits that it was plausible based on the record here, and therefore it should be upheld.
This is Judge Meredith. You acknowledge that essentially, if the claimed condition is to be attributed to obesity, that's not fatal to the claim because it can serve as the intermediate step. So once the adjudicator has evidence that the claimed condition may have been caused by obesity, is there not some obligation on the adjudicator to continue on and look at, well, what caused the obesity? Because just getting to that point, the veteran hasn't lost yet by saying it's attributed to obesity.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we would submit that there would not be an obligation in that case. Because obesity is an intermediate step that implies that there has to be both evidence on one side connecting that obesity to a primary connected condition connecting it to a service-connected disability, and evidence on the other side of that inquiry suggesting that the veteran's obesity caused or aggravated the claim's secondary condition. So there must be evidence on both sides suggesting that there is a connection there in order to require that the board address it. And I would note, as the GC opinion makes clear, obesity is a very common disorder among the population generally. It's 69% of the U.S. adults are overweight or obese, and 76% of veterans are overweight or obese. So if it was considered the issue of obesity as an intermediate step, if that was considered raised whenever a claimant was obese, and even whether that obesity had that second component net, VA would be considering obesity as an intermediate step in a large number of cases where the veteran did not intend to raise the issue and where the issue of obesity had nothing to do with the condition claim.
But this is Judge Toth. I mean, I know in the GC opinion you cite to the National Heart and Lung Standard for Obesity, but I mean, the secretary is not bound to choose that definition. It could choose a more restrictive one or change this to something like morbid obesity, which I think is something like 35 BMI. I mean, it chose the definition that just happens to be a broad one.
I apologize, just to clarify, you're talking about the definition of obesity?
Yes, I mean, the secretary could have chosen a more restrictive, well, I mean, you were saying that you know, a negative consequence of this is that because the definition includes a lot of people, but I don't know what to make of that. I mean, the secretary chose a given definition. It just happens to be a very broad one. Secretary could choose a different definition that's more restrictive, that such that it would apply in fewer situations.
Continue.
Yeah, no, here's the situation. When you have a broad definition meets a low standard, the natural conclusion of that is there's just a lot of situations in this which could be conceivably raised. That more, to me, that speaks more to the choice of a definition than it does to whether or not the secretary would have to exercise a duty. I mean, the point is, if that's the definition, you know, that's what we would hold the, you know, and it's reasonably raised, the standard is what it is. We would just have to hold the secretary to that standard.
So the secretary respectfully submits that the GC opinion does not define the issue of obesity or the disorder of obesity, but was more put forward to determine the answer to certain questions, such as whether obesity was a disease for service connection purposes, whether it could serve as an event, and whether it could serve as this intermediate step. So the GC opinion here does not define obesity. It talks about BMI is a mechanism of estimating obesity, but it's not defining obesity, and it doesn't say anything outside of what other things could serve as intermediate step. It's just clarifying where obesity can fit into the service connection context and clarifying that it's not a disease, so it can't be this, it can't be service connected on a direct basis, but it can be this intermediate step here. And because it's so common, this is important that adjudicators know how to handle this issue.
Ms. Karen, I'd like to, this is Judge Bartley, I'd like to move on to one of the questions that I asked appellant's counsel, and that is with regard to the first argument that appellant makes in her brief about whether the veteran's major depressive disorder increased the functional impairment that sleep apnea causes. This was raised in the initial brief, but elaborated on, I would say, in the reply brief. And so I don't think in your brief you really had the chance to explain how you see the Ward case applying here, and what was the appropriate question to ask in light of Ward, and whether the November 2017 examiner who gave the opinion sufficiently answered whatever question should have been asked. So could you just address all of those, please?
Of course. So the question here, Ward dealt with whether this permanent worsening standard, and you found any kind of increase in the disability caused by service-connected condition would be compensable under this aggravation standard. So if there was some sort of, if there was an increase in appellant's sleep apnea due to his major depressive disorder, that would be an aggravation of the disorder, and then that would be compensable under Ward. However, what the board is saying and what the examiner is saying is that the insomnia that was caused by appellant's mood disorder did not affect the progression of sleep apnea in any way, and it was instead due to this collapse of oropharyngeal tissue. So whether the insomnia independently increases daytime sleepiness is not relevant to whether whether this aggravation standard is met, because the insomnia does not increase the functional impairment caused by the sleep apnea, which the examiner here and the board makes clear.
And you get that from, I mean, I'm looking at the opinion right now. There's a sentence that says veteran's mood disorder is contributing to his insomnia. And then the second sentence says, however, it has no effect on the etiology and or progression of sleep apnea, which is due to collapse of the oropharyngeal tissue. And then the rest of the opinion, in my view, is irrelevant to this issue. So you have those two sentences. And so, and one of the sentences is really just admitting that the veteran's mood disorder contributes to insomnia. So it's really just one sentence that we have here on the whether the MDD is aggravating the sleep apnea. And that one sentence appears to just talk about the collapse, the fact that sleep apnea is due to the collapse of the tissue. And your view is that this is sufficient of an explanation to answer any aggravation question.
Yes, so if the opinion here had just focused on the etiology, then that would be addressing the causative element. But given that the opinion here also talks about the progression of sleep apnea and explicitly acknowledges that the effects of the mood disorder cause insomnia, so demonstrating that the examiner did consider this, but found that it was not an aggravating factor for sleep apnea because it did not affect the sleep apnea itself. So people can be tired for many different reasons. The relevant inquiry here is whether the service-connected condition, in this case, the major depressive disorder, in any way influenced the condition that's claimed here, the sleep apnea, and contributed to any kind of increase in that disability. And the secretary submits that here this examination adequately addressed that question and found that it did not affect the sleep apnea.
Would you say from this one sentence, however, it has no effect on the etiology and or progression of sleep apnea, which is due to the collapse of the tissue, that there's ever anything that could aggravate the sleep apnea?
Yes, so the examiner is talking here about what would be an aggravating factor for the sleep apnea would have to in some way relate to the oropharyngeal tissue. I don't know what that could possibly be given that I don't have the medical expertise there, but I don't believe that the examiner here is foreclosing the possibility that there could never be anything aggravating the sleep apnea. It's just saying that this does not, the mood disorder does not.
But doesn't Ward say that we are looking not at the factor that causes the OSA, but at the question that the analysis would require questioning whether there was an increase in the functional impairment that's caused by the sleep apnea?
I apologize if I use causative language before, but the inquiry in Ward is any increase in the disability by the service-connected condition of the non-service-connected condition. And here, the examiner clearly states that this was not aggravated beyond its normal progression and explains that that's not the case because the mood disorder does not in any way affect the progression of sleep apnea. If I may, I'd like to go back to the other issue regarding obesity as an intermediate step, if that's okay with the court.
Sure, go ahead.
Sure. So again, I would like to emphasize that without evidence in the record suggesting that appellant's physical limitations and disinterest in activities resulting from his service-connected disabilities caused or aggravated his obesity, the issue of whether appellant's service-connected conditions caused or aggravated his obesity cannot be reasonably raised. And to find otherwise would require both that the board be knowledgeable of medical matters and require that the board rely on extra record evidence to find an issue reasonably raised. And that would not be in line with relevant law.
Now, Ms. Karen, this is Judge Bartley again. Is there any relevance to the fact that the veteran was represented by a VSO down below? You spend a bit of time in your brief on this issue.
The reason we discussed this issue is to say that it was not explicitly raised by appellant. The inquiry here is both whether it was reasonably raised by the record or raised directly by the appellant or his representative. So in discussing this, we're just saying that he did not raise it below and directly affirmatively. This could, of course, still be reasonably raised by the record, and the fact that he was represented below would not affect that analysis. If it was reasonably raised by the record, and even if he had been represented by an attorney below and he had not said he had not explicitly raised it affirmatively by a statement of the attorney or the veteran himself, if it was otherwise reasonably raised by the record, the board would still have an obligation to address it.
Thank you.
Of course. I would note that appellant and today has argued that the court should recognize this, that any kind of limitation in a physical functioning can cause or aggravate obesity. However, we submit that recognizing this kind of connection there without evidence in the record supporting such a connection would require this court to take judicial notice of that fact. And obesity is a complex medical disorder, as the GC opinion made clear. So the causes and aggravating factors of obesity are not facts of universal notoriety, not subject to reasonable dispute. So we would submit that there would still have to be something in the record making that connection. If there are no further questions, I'll close.
Judge Meredith, do you have further questions?
I don't, thank you.
And Judge Toth, do you have further questions?
I do not, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Karen. We'll move on then. Ms. Donna Hauer, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Secretary has put forth several erroneous legal standards in his argument that I would like to address. First is that the court needs to apply the deferential, clearly erroneous standard of review here. This issue of whether this theory was reasonably raised is not appropriate for that deferential standard of review, because the Federal Circuit has held that this court is required, in fact, to determine in the first instance whether theories are reasonably raised. So this is not the sort of board finding of fact that is entitled to that deferential standard of review. It's a determination that this court is empowered to and required to make in the first instance. So I would disagree that standard is applicable here. Second, I think that the Secretary has been inconsistent about whether this is a medical question or required medical evidence or not. He noted that a lay statement by the claimant that his lack of activity led to weight gain and obesity would be the kind of evidence that we need here. It's incorrect for two reasons. First, it conflates expressly and reasonably raised theories, and it also suggests that this is not a medical question. And I would emphasize that it's something that we know is that lack of exercise is a possible cause of weight gain. As far as whether that would require this court to look at extra record evidence, I don't think that's true because the general counsel opinion is not record, extra record evidence. It's not evidence. Although the court is not bound by it, the board is. And the board is also charged with knowledge of its contents in determining what possible theories of causation are available here, as the court said in Ingram. Picking up on Judge Toth and Meredith's points about the duty to assist here, we have, in fact, two medical opinions that say that Mr. Garner's obesity was at least relevant to, if not a risk factor for his sleep apnea. And coupled with the fact that he said he was exercising less, I would agree that that did charge VA with the obligation to investigate that theory further. And we're not arguing here that that his activity level did cause his obesity, just that there is sufficient evidence to make it a potential cause. And similarly to that end, despite the secretary's focus on paragraph 14 of the general counsel opinion that talks about the complexity of obesity and its other potential causes, all of those other causes don't have to be eliminated to raise lack of activity as a potential one here, particularly given Mr. Garner's noted lessened activity levels. And in that regard, I would say that, yes, the general counsel opinion notes that lots of veterans are obese. In fact, there's a higher percentage there than in the general population. And that's the very reason why the secretary has the MOVE program, which was offered to Mr. Garner and which he declined. The MOVE program, it recognizes, it's further recognition by VA that there is a link between exercise and weight gain and obesity. What the MOVE program is, it's a weight management program for veterans that was offered to Mr. Garner here. So it's within VA's knowledge that there is a link between lack of exercise and obesity. It doesn't require resort to extra record evidence here. Turning to the aggravation question, Mr. Garner's depression did not need to affect the sleep apnea itself. That's the language that the secretary has used here. Ward is to the contrary pretty clearly. And the court recently reaffirmed this in Walsh in discussing 3.310 before turning to its interplay with the general counsel opinion. And it said at page 306 of that decision that aggravation is just causation of an increase in disability meaning the functional impairment of earning capacity, not the underlying biological mechanism of the condition that causes that impairment of earning capacity. So the standard that the inquiry is into the effect on the underlying disease process is simply wrong, going back to Allen and as reaffirmed in both Ward and Walsh. Finally, I would just note that looping back to the question of the link between obesity and exercise, this finding that this theory was reasonably raised here would not lead to the sort of slippery slope that whenever a veteran is obese, there is a duty to inquire into that theory. These facts don't implicate such a broad proposition because there is also evidence that there was a decrease in exercise. It's not simply that Mr. Garner was obese. So, Your Honors, we would ask for two remedies here. As to the obesity theory, we would ask the court to find that it was reasonably raised and to remand for the board to adjudicate that theory in the first instance. And second, we would ask the court to find that the board clearly erred in finding the medical evidence adequate to adjudicate a theory of secondary service connection based on causation, or excuse me, aggravation by Mr. Garner's depression, and remand with instructions that the board conduct further development there. If there are no further questions, then I thank you, Your Honors.
Judge Meredith, do you have any further questions?
I don't, thank you.
And Judge Toth, do you have any further questions?
I don't, thank you to both counsel.
Okay, thank you all and both very much for your arguments. The case is submitted for consideration. The court is adjourned, and unfortunately, we won't be able to greet counsel today personally, but I hope you all have a good day. It was a pleasure hearing this case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.